Hello and welcome. This is D. Garrett Nadeau presenting one of a number of podcasts on behalf of the Lancashire Authors Association. The purpose of these podcasts is to discuss writers and various writing topics, with an emphasis on Lancashire writing and writers, but including a broad range of subjects from all over England, and regular musical interludes to vary your listening experience. My guest for this podcast is Helen Vasey. Welcome, Helen.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for asking me.
No problem. I'm interested in your writing experiences and your audio work that you've done over the years. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got started? And
how I got started was really as soon as I came out of university, I got a job in a radio station.
Wow, fantastic.
As a copywriter writing, you know, all the ads that you hear.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that started to test me creatively, because whether you're writing what we call a straight ad, which
right.
doesn't have sound effects or music, or, you know, a simple, straightforward ad, or some clients would want you to write something that was funny or very creative.
Yeah.
And so it was a very interesting sort of.
Yeah. Did you have much interest in writing when you were little? Well, like when you were younger, like when, because some people start writing when they're 10, 11, 12 years old. Did you do that sort of thing, or?
My experience of literature was mainly through reading as a child.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
But, you know, because we were taught to read very early on. So it was just a done thing in the family.
Right.
My first writing experience was a bit of poetry, and there's a great huge long poem with I can't remember, it was about the Arab Israeli conflict,
yeah.
which
right.
at a particular time I felt very strongly about,
yeah.
and so I wrote this poem and whacked it off to the publishers, and they wrote back saying that it was of a very good standard, you know, I was really chuffed.
Brilliant, yeah,
yes,
that's great.
Thought, this is fantastic, I'm going to be published. And then you just see the little bit at the bottom saying, if you pay £10 to have it in our book.
All right, your first experience of vanity publishing then.
Yes, yes.
Oh, what a shame.
And then
you didn't do it, I assume. You didn't pay
no,
the £10.
No, I did not. I certainly did not. But I think the other thing I was very keen on was letter writing.
Oh, right.
And I think all the...
Did you have a pen pal or anything like that?
I had pen pals in Holland and Finland, but I also...
Wow.
My parents used to send me away in the summer, get rid of it, and to go to France.
Was that like
families.
Camp or... Oh, right, okay.
And...
Was that on an exchange basis, like an exchange student?
Sometimes
sort of thing,
it was, but largely it was, they were people that were found by my family,
okay.
and I'd go, and my mother sent me to a load of five French boys. She said, boys will be nasty with you, that they won't speak English.
Okay.
So, but it was that.
That's a great experience, though.
It was fabulous experience, and it was, well, I went on to do French at university.
Right,
but
okay.
I think all the time I spent out there, because I've lived in France for about 3 years in total, I used to love writing letters, and I can still...
In French as well as English.
Oh, I've done them in French, yes. But
yes.
I mean, I'm writing letters to my parents and my grandmother and explaining it. And I can while away hours writing. I write at home now.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, it's the constant thing on the boil.
Yeah.
It'll
yeah.
never get finished. But you can, I can get
writing isn't writing. Just about getting published, is it?
No,
it's a, you know, it's a broad experience and a pleasure
yes.
for many people who don't sort of, their aspiration isn't necessarily to get published.
Yeah.
It's just because they enjoy the process of writing. Something cathartic about it as
there
well.
There is.
Yeah, it's great.
It is.
So anyway, when you finished university, you got this job.
Yes.
With a radio station.
Radio station.
Doing copy.
Writing copy for radio. Ads.
Would you say you wrote jingles, or did you?
Somebody else used to write the music.
Somebody wrote the. Oh right.
You
okay.
used to have. I mean, I don't know what it's like now, but there were various libraries of music,
right.
and so I'd select the music because it was there. It was licensed. It was paid for. Or you would have a customized jingle. There were people who made composed
okay.
the jingles. But then you'd have a library of sound effects as well. And then
wow, fantastic.
Writing it.
And all that at your disposal. So you were kind of creating
creating
a mini program. It's like creating a little
Sometimes.
Show or whatever.
Yes,
yeah.
it was fun.
Yeah,
and,
I'll bet.
It was. And I think it's a huge discipline.
Yeah.
Because you're condensing
your
so
time,
much.
You would have said you've got like 3 minutes or two minutes or
15
whatever.
15 seconds.
15 seconds.
Yeah, right, and you're not always just doing one
to make an impact.
Maybe, yes.
Wow.
Or 30 seconds sometimes.
Yeah.
A lot of it was part of a campaign.
Well, that's a great test. I wonder how many people out there could do that. How many writers out there could sort of? I want you to impress me in 15 seconds, or tell me, you know, what I need to know in that short a space
right.
of time. That's
yeah.
brilliant. Yeah, yeah, that sounds really good.
It is a discipline. It's,
yeah.
It is.
You must have to have a talent for it, though, a knack for doing it, because I can't imagine that lots of people would be able to do that. I mean,
I think whether you
had you studied to do it, had you
no.
had you trained it, you just seemed to be able to do it.
Yeah, I think the thing was when I got the job, it was that I can remember it. I had to do something, sell something, and I sold it. It was a scrapyard, I think, I did some wording to the sound of oranges and lemons, the bells of St. and it was all. Really naff, actually. But
yeah. Well, somebody must have been impressed
sort of
by
saw,
it. Yeah.
Yeah, they sort of saw it. And then from then on, once I got the job, I can remember sitting in the office the first day and some of the salesmen used to come along and they go, "Oh, hello, you're the new copywriter, right?" "Yes. Yes, I am. Well, I've got this brief." "Oh, don't ask. No, I've never done it before." But eventually, after about an hour or two, I had to get stuck in.
Right.
But, I think there's,
Were you hired by the radio station
yes.
itself?
Yeah.
And you weren't hired by the companies for whom you were doing the advertising.
That came later.
So you could do advertising for any company. Somebody
yeah.
could come in and say, "We want to do some advertising," and they could be anything. They could
yes.
be selling soap or
that's right.
or scrapyards or
yes.
they could be, it could be anything.
Car companies.
Right. Okay.
So you had a whole load of products.
Yeah. Yeah. But then later you got involved in the travel. The travel area was an area that you got into
I had a really, really lovely managing director who, like, he was just all about giving people opportunities. And if he thought you had some potential, he'd try and get the best out of people. And he was
cool.
really great and very supportive to
yeah,
his staff.
Yeah.
And he thought I'd be pretty good at doing these travel features.
Okay.
So I did these and I went, I think, like Norway and...
Went off to different places.
Yeah,
and
Yugoslavia when it was Yugoslavia and Spain.
So you went on your own. You didn't go as a team of people. You just went by...
No, it was just me. The research had already been done for me.
Okay, right. So they sort of had... They told you where to go and all that sort of stuff.
Yes, or I'd have a rep from the travel company.
Oh, right. So you had like 3 days in Yugoslavia and during that time you go to A, B and C then you talk about it or you interview people.
Well, I interview people and then you get pick as much of the atmosphere up.
But this was all radio. This was
this
a radio
was a, this
show.
This was all radio.
So would you do a half-hour show or...
Yeah.
A half-hour show, was it?
Yes,
And that would be sort of aired on the radio, on a weekly basis? Or
every
few
different
months,
people
or?
Did the features. It wasn't just me doing the features.
Oh, right, okay. So they might have a travel feature 1 week and then a fashion feature the next week or something like that.
Well, there was a travel feature every week for a while. It's just that
but it might be different people would do the travel. Oh, right, okay, I understand. Yeah.
And so, but then I sort of developed into sort of more general features I started doing them, first of all, actually, with independent radio, GWR, in Bristol. And it was a fascinating kind of existence because you learned a lot.
Right.
And in particular in the independent radio sector, that was linked very much to helping the community. And so you'd be doing stuff on finance, you'd be doing stuff on motor neuron disease.
Oh, right, okay.
But it was a really well-designed package as well, because you'd have a helpline and people could ring in and they could get help.
Who would come up with these ideas? Were there a team of people on the radio station sort of saying, what features are we going to have?
There was a need. And there was getting women back into work.
Yeah.
They were topical as well.
And issues of the day
issues
that
of
people
the day,
would talk
yes.
about. Right.
So that was really interesting.
Did politics ever get, did it ever get kind of really deep and intense or anything? Or these were kind of lighthearted?
There had to be, they're not lighthearted if you're dealing with illness. No,
of course not.
But they were not politically biased.
Yeah, okay.
They couldn't be. But and then after that I went to work for, but you see, all the way, it's slightly different writing. It's always taken me into... It's nudged me on through stuff. And then I went to doing more varied features. They weren't all about helping the community.
Did you ever get scared? Did you ever think, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this. I can't do this.
Constantly.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah,
so it was kind of exciting and...
It was... Well, certainly I was scared when I went into a radio station in Worcester, the radio station there. And I was late for my first morning because I'd actually been given the wrong time.
Oh, right.
And we got off on a very bad footing.
Uh-oh.
But... you go out again and package stuff. The prison, features that we did.
Yeah.
Were fascinating. It was fascinating and frightening to be in the prison. You know, one door shuts behind you, another one opens. And it's very, very scary. I think one of the things.
You felt vulnerable then in that situation, would you say? Or just scary because. You didn't know what to expect, or?
I felt vulnerable because when you know how few prison officers there can be.
Oh, right, okay.
Compared with the community that's in there.
Yeah, I would have imagined you'd been well protected.
I was.
Well enough protected, but still not all 100% sure. That somebody might kick off at any time, I guess.
Actually, the producer of the program got, there was a lockdown when she was there.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
But the it was just a strange experience. You know, you're talking to these men, and I remember asking one, because he could sing beautifully, because I interviewed the band, I interviewed the sports team and what they did for disabled children. But the man of the band said, I said, you've got a lovely voice, Charlie. And I said, you could make some money with that. And he said in this Irish accent, which I won't do, he said, sure, when we want money, we rob banks. And I thought, oh, right.
This is before the days of X Factor, when you could sort of get your million if you want it. Yeah.
All that was really, I think, possibly one of the most interesting bits of my time. And again, you do the interviews, you come back, you write around the package and you present it.
Right.
And from then on, I sort of thought this is one of London beckoned. And I had got a bit tired of it all. And so.
So you were still in Newcastle at that time?
No, I'd moved to Bristol.
Oh, yeah, sorry. You did say Worcester and Bristol. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I'd moved by this time.
So you'd moved down there.
And I'd also been living in Kent and doing Invicta Radio, commercial production there. But I thought, no. And everyone kept saying, ooh, your voice. Because I used to voice a lot of ads.
Right, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
And silly voices, and all that sort of thing. But it was in the...
We may challenge you to do
later. No. It was just the call of slightly
like doing silly voices sometimes.
I don't mind it.
So you moved down to London. And that was because you thought London was a place to go, London the place to be, or?
It was that I decided that I would announce. I'd be an announcer. And, so it was then I was moving to voice work more.
Right. You didn't have the job first. You went there looking for a job.
I didn't actually move there. I mean, I was commuting, so.
Oh, okay. Right.
I still do. But, I was very lucky. I got a job with Channel 4 as an announcer. And that was on and off it's been on and off for 20 years.
Wow. Okay.
But styles change. And I was a freelance announcer there. I was never staff.
Right.
And it was just a lovely place to work. But again, it was a slightly different sort of writing because, the styles changed, the programming changed as well to some extent, but you had to inform the public about certain things, about what was coming up, do it in a clear, concise manner. And the more you go on, then you inject your personality a little bit into it that you've got to remember. So there was a slight...
So you say things like, the next movie is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Okay. But they have actually, I'm not talking about Channel 4 particularly, it's just everybody really. There's much less time to say things. I can remember in the early days of being an announcer, 30 seconds,
plenty of time.
If we get less than 30 seconds. But, and the other thing too now, is that, you get a much more varied kind of accent.
Okay, so I think it's time for another tune. Helen, would you like to introduce this one?
Yeah, this is lovely. I saw this lady in concert. She's a wonderful, relaxing singer. It's Madeleine Peru, and it's Don't Wait Too Long.
Okay, Don't Wait Too Long.
You can cry a million tears. You can wait a million years. If you think that time will change your ways, don't wait too long. When your morning turns to night, who'll be loving you by candlelight? If you think that time
Okay, that was a lovely piece of music, Helen. Can you tell us why you chose that?
Yeah, I mean, apart from her style, it's actually just a purely sort of enjoyment thing. It reminds me of sort of Sunday afternoons with friends,
right. Oh,
meal.
Oh, wow, yeah. Nice glass of wine.
A nice glass of wine, or three, or four. In fact, a lot of what I've chosen reminds me of being with friends.
Yeah.
I think that's the reason.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's good. Excellent. Right, Helen. Maybe you can say a bit more about the importance of accents. Because I think over the years, that's kind of changed.
It has immensely. When I first started, it was the thing to have a kind of mellifluous, nice toned voice and that, an RP, a received pronunciation or standard British accent. And that was regarded as the norm. And since then, it has gradually changed. And now we're seeing not just, on advertisements, but in continuity across all the channels, we get a variation of accents.
Did you find it hard? Because you're from the north of England. Did that make it difficult? Did you have to take lessons to learn how to, in the early days?
No, I didn't. It was just something that evolved over the years. I think once I went to university, you just meet different people. And I traveled quite a lot. And it just, my, I wish I still had my Lancashire accent. Well, it just slipped away.
Yeah.
And it was fortuitous at that time that it, I could use it for broadcasting. But now what we have is a lovely variety of accents on television. And it's more about the accent than it is about the tone of voice.
A little bird tells me that you're pretty good at accents, though. You can do different ones. Can you give us a sample of that?
I'm okay, but for example, and I'm not name-dropping, but there's a certain person who's very well-known who goes, "Dear Four in the Big Brother House." And he was actually a continuity, a Channel 4 continuity announcer at one stage.
Right.
And he shadowed me, as he, because you shadow all the announcers to learn the job. And for schools broadcasts in the morning, it sounded quite strange initially to have this very, very broad and lovely Geordie accent. And I'm sorry, Marcus, for the impersonation. But the accents now are much more important in terms of broadcasting. You hear it on Radio 4. You've got a variety of accents now. And you hear it across the television channels. And I think with the advertisements, what you get, rather than people doing accents, you get the real people doing the accents, which is something I always used to insist on, if possible.
Yeah.
When I was...
Do they make an attempt to hire people with different accents depending on what kind of show they want to produce or what kind of show they want to do?
Are you talking about continuity there?
Yeah.
Yes, I think people, they have, you know, the TV stations have a profile, say, that they want to put over a certain image. And so, for example, on Channel 4, you have a lovely range of voices from, you've got Irish, Scottish, the sort of Midlands, a lovely range of voices, and they're very natural. And across the other channels, yeah, there are, you know, on the other channels you get Dave and there's some in-your-face continuity. BBC One, you know, it's more relaxed. The BBC is slightly different.
Right.
I think there's less of a range on there at the moment. But there's an age range and an attitude range as well, you know, because you can have an accent, but the words you use, and they can sound old. You can tell an old Lancashire person from a young, hip Lancashire person. I mean, even me using the word hip puts me in an era.
How often do people work to a script? Do they always have a script when they're doing this, or is it ad-lib sometimes?
No, not in the instances where I've been doing continuity. Now, if I take, for example, the other TV channels, which were non-terrestrial, I used to work for a thing called Carton Food Network and Carton Select. And these were digital channels, and you could write the continuity and record it. They were pre-recorded, so you weren't doing it live. And sometimes that was checked. Usually they relied on you to get it right.
Yeah.
With Channel 4, for example, most of the continuity is live, and the scripts are all checked. And you have two shifts a day, for example, the early shift and the late shift, and you write for the following shift. But all those scripts are really well checked, and the whole schedule for an evening, say, will be checked by a group of people to check that the ads are right, what you're saying is correct. All the scripts have to go through lawyers sometimes because various programs are contentious.
Yeah.
And you need to make sure that the script is right. But you're not always scripting for yourself. And I think that that's quite important because you may be scripting for somebody else and everybody has their own style. For example, there's one of my colleagues who has a very clipped, upbeat style and another who has a much longer, more relaxed, slightly more rambling style, as is my own. But you have to be aware when you're writing for them that you write it perhaps as they might read it, if you can.
Wow.
And sometimes when somebody doesn't do that for you, you end up sounding completely odd because, Well, you could do. If you're a pro, you won't. But you could do if you don't adapt your script or adapt your presentation.
Do you get any time to practice? If you're going to do the reading, do you practice that?
Yes,
before?
In between the programs. What you're doing in between the programs is you're not just sitting on your bottom. You're actually writing for the next day, whatever shift you're doing or whatever else somebody will be doing. And you read through because you have a network director outside for the main channel, for the other channels. And I tend to work more and more for now, or until recently I have. I'm back there in February. But you do practice.
And sounds like it's quite a bit of pressure, though. It's you've got to do this very quickly, haven't you? There's no time to waste.
Well, if you're writing for the next day, because you're viewing the programs as well, you have to know what you're writing about.
Yeah.
And so it can be very pressurized on the main channel.
Yeah.
Equally, you know, you once you get used to it, you take it in your stride. But you do have time. You run through it. So, but the number of slip-ups. I've made an awful slip-up. And this was on one of the, on Moor 4. And I don't know if you'd be able to repeat this, but.
Oh, we must listen to this.
It's very tired. And sometimes your mind stumbles. And I think it was called something like Lost or Stranded in Grizzly Territory. That wasn't the exact title. I can't remember it. But I think it was meant to be Country. And I'd been giving it the wrong name. And I suddenly realized this, but I was so tired. Basically, I slipped on the word country. And it left the
Are we going to leave that up to our listeners' imaginations then?
I slipped on the word, so it was something lost but found in grizzly country. And I stammered and left the R-Y first country. And so.
Oh my goodness. And this was live.
Yes. But I then got the word country right the second time. So it was lost but found.
Do you get told off? Do you get told country. Off? Do you get told off for stuff like that?
No, I believe.
You've been naughty or?
No, it wasn't. People understand these things. And frequently when you're tired, you do stammer. Not stammer, but stumble.
Yeah.
But that one, all of us have done something like that. But that was a classic. And, and in fact, rather than being told off, it was laughed at a lot.
Oh, right. I'm sure.
And replayed a lot.
Okay, so I think it's time for another tune. Helen, would you like to introduce this one?
Yes, this is one that really tugs at my heartstrings, and it's very emotional piece. It's Josip Björling and Robert Merrill with the Pearl Fishers duet.
Okay, let's hear that.
Oh,
Okay, Helen, that was an interesting piece of music. Why did you choose that?
A couple of reasons, largely because my husband would love to be able to sing opera, and when that comes on, it's usually late in the evening, we put it on, full whack.
He doesn't start singing, does he? Or does he sing along?
Sometimes. He's actually got a brilliant speaking. Oh, I mean, wow. He's also been in broadcasting.
Oh, excellent. Wow.
So.
Is that how you met?
Yes, it is, actually.
Oh.
But it also reminds me of his father, who got a scholarship to, opera school in Rome.
Oh, wow.
But he couldn't go. And, I really associate it with him.
Yeah.
And we were one time traveling down to France with them, and there was something, some opera on, and I thought, hang on, where's that coming from? And I heard my father-in-law singing just in the back seat of the car, and it was lovely, and he could sing a lot. So
brilliant.
He was a very, very lovely man.
Yeah. So fond memories there. Mm. Okay, great. Thank you. Right. I think what we're talking about is a different kind of writing from what most people are used to.
I don't always deliberately get into something. I either drift or I expand, and audio description just sort of came along. And have you ever heard of audio description?
No, I don't. I'm not quite sure what that is.
Well, basically what you're doing, whether it be for a TV program or a film, you're weaving a commentary between the dialogue to describe facial expressions, what they're wearing, the set, and that sort of thing. And so you're trying to make somebody who has impaired vision see. You're painting a picture for them. And hopefully you're not... Well, you can't talk over the dialogue.
No.
So you have to make sure that you don't do that. And you're not adding to the length of the program at all, because, as I say, this is woven commentary.
Right.
And sometimes it can be simple. It can be for, say, a TV soap. And it almost sometimes boils down to stage directions. He leaves, she leaves, they come in. Other times you're adding, as I say, facial expressions, what they're wearing.
Right.
But equally, sometimes you get something vital as to the plot. For example, somebody steals a set of keys. Or they just do something that's visual. Mm. And sometimes you don't have time to get that in.
Right.
And so you have to find a way of doing it. Sometimes it's impossible, but sometimes you have to do it. And there are programs which are very tight. It's very difficult to describe comedy.
Mm.
For example, Mr. Bean is incredibly difficult to do because he's so visual.
Yeah,
and it takes a long time. And sometimes, you know, when you actually explain a joke, it's not
the humor's
funny,
lost.
Is
yeah.
It?
Yeah, no. Yeah.
And there's the other thing of trying to pace the audio description. For example, I don't know, it's not just with cinema movies, it's with TV movies or anything that gives you a lot of space in which to speak.
Right.
Sometimes you can throw too much at it.
Mm.
Because if you're sitting there and listening and you're trying to get everything in, or somebody, your audio describer is trying to get everything in, then you can only take so much information in.
Mm.
And try and keep with the story. So you've got to try and keep the person involved with their program.
Right.
And not move away
from
it and put over too much information.
Yeah.
And so I believe there's also theatre description. And one time I described a painting, which was, it was a really abstract painting. And that was a wonderfully difficult but fascinating task.
Yeah.
So I believe they also have audio description in galleries, but it's not been around for years and years. And and there's a certain percentage of programs on television which have to be audio described, and I believe they're always trying to up the number.
So are all films done that nowadays? And do you include video films and videos and things like that?
I don't know about DVDs. Some of them, they're not all done, I don't think.
Yeah.
But you always get the subtitling option on DVDs. I believe more and more and more of them are. If a film is done, because I hire my company out to this other company, so they employ my company, which is essentially me, to do the work. And this particular company does a lot of film work, pre-release movies.
Oh, yeah.
And so all those films, if they go to DVD, will have audio description on them. And it's a very, very secret affair doing these pre-release movies. You're behind bars almost, Dana.
Do you mean they have to lock you in a room to, in order to sort of watch the film? And then you're not allowed to tell anybody.
You're not allowed to tell anybody. And it's very secure. You can't, because these are big, big movies that they're dealing with. And they're very, very good. The scripting is rigorously checked.
Right.
And it's very important for that to happen. And, you know, the film companies are very good about doing audio description. The other thing is that you cannot, when you're doing audio description, detract from what the director intends. You have to say what you see.
Right.
Not say what you think it might be and interpret what is happening. And it's a very rewarding job. We don't get much chance to meet the people, our clients, would you say? I mean clients in the sense of the viewers.
But I
believe that, you know, there's quite a good take up.
When you're working on a film, how much time do you get to, you know, could you spend all day doing it, or can you go away and come back and do it, or do you have to do it all in one go? Or?
Well, it's basically you have a computer program where you're watching on a TV size. On a computer screen, you've got on part of your screen is the whatever your program or film you're doing, and then you've got a script on the other side, and you can input times.
Where
the dialogue stops, you input that time, and where it starts again, you input that time. So it gives you a box.
Okay, and then you fill that in. I see. Right.
Now, films. But cinema films will take a lot longer to write. It takes days.
Oh, really? Oh, you don't do it like all in one go. Right. Okay.
No. It is. And with television programs, it can take days as well, though, television films. Sometimes you can be adding as much as 8,000 words.
Wow. So you're going through it like minute by minute, really.
You're going through it frame by frame sometimes.
A three or four hour film. That would be a long time.
Because you have to get the detail right.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. You also realize how much you don't know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you've got a bank of people around you, and we all have different knowledge and specializations. So there's one guy, you say, what's that car? And it would go, oh, it's a whatever. Or what's that part of a car?
Oh, right, okay.
And you really
do this as a team then?
No, one person will work on one thing, but if you're stuck.
Oh, right, okay. But if you're stuck with something, you can ask.
You can ask, or you've got a whole range of books, and you really do. And if you think about, you try to describe costume, and you say, well, he's got a Regency jacket on.
Well, but if you don't know anything about the fashions of the time, then you have to
You have to have an amount of
knowledge
or find out. But equally,
I'd never realized how much goes into all of this. It's a lot, really, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. But equally, you can think, well, if I say, oh, he's driving a Porsche Carrera or whatever, to somebody who doesn't know cars, that won't mean a thing. So where you can, you would try and get the description of the car in as well as its name or mark, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot to consider.
Yeah, wow. I'll bet.
But the great thing is that I one time had the experience of talking about getting a reward in terms of just how good it is to do the job. One of the film companies took a film that I'd written and a colleague of mine had recorded, and they had a day for a group of blind children or visually impaired children. And it was lovely because later a Radio 4 show went to interview these children, and a little boy was interviewed, and he was asked what he thought of the film, and he said it was great, and he described a bit that I'd written, and it was so accurate, and he was so hyped up about it and loved it. And when the interviewer asked him, you know, did you enjoy your day? He said, well, yeah, it's been the best day of my life.
Wow.
Now, that's a rewarding job to do.
You may
only have, even if it's for one person, worth it. And you very rarely hear back from what you do, but occasionally it's nice. And a lot of my colleagues feel the same.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's one person or a million.
Yeah.
If one gets it.
Oh, that's, sounds like a great job. So what are you doing now? I mean, are you doing the similar sorts of things at the present time?
Yes. I'm doing a lot of audio description.
It's mostly audio description.
Mostly at the moment. The announcing hasn't gone by the board. And voicing. And I also used to write corporate videos, but now I tend to voice them rather than write them. So I do a bit of that. And a bit of announcing.
Yeah.
So it's...
Do you have to go out touting for work? Do you have to sort of... you have to call people up and say, I'm available, or et cetera, or do you have any openings? Or
You've got to really bang on doors.
And, do you really? Right.
Yeah, it's very competitive in the voiceover market.
Oh, I didn't
very,
know that.
Very competitive. You've got sort of a lot of well-known actors do ads now, and say 30 years ago, they wouldn't have been seen dead.
No.
Doing them because, you just didn't do that kind of thing.
Is it important to sort of stay in there? I mean, to keep working, to keep, you don't want to take a few years out and then try to come back into it again, or do you say
you
that,
would
you say it doesn't matter?
Quickly.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
The other thing is, I'm getting old. And the young guard are taking over. So you've got to hang on in there. And there was a time I was doing Channel 4 announcing. I was working at BBC World Service. That was news reading and, continuity.
Right.
That was scary. Because, I got the time wrong once when I was reading the news.
Oh, right.
And I thought, fortunately, the announcer was in another studio, because I think I was reading to the world. He actually corrected the time, because I thought, I might have set a revolution off at the wrong time.
Right.
I was doing that at Channel 4, and then, you could go and voice trails, because it was near Soho that I worked as well. And there was a lot of work around, and I think you go through being a flavor of the month for a while.
But there's no real loyalty then. You wouldn't say there's a sense of loyalty. They don't sort of keep asking you back because of any sense of loyalty. They'll switch to somebody else.
If you don't match the profile that they want, if you're good at what you do, but you just don't, you sound too old or I don't know, you project the wrong image.
Right.
Then, no, it doesn't matter how good you are at the job.
Yeah,
you,
or if you're awkward to work with or something like that.
So it's a very, very up and down kind of existence. Yeah. But as I say, I've been lucky that over 20 years I've stuck in there. And,
well, I guess somebody has to do it, as they say.
Well, yes, somebody has to do it.
Yeah.
But I think that's really... and of course I do this bit of writing at home. As I say, I can become totally absorbed. And I know where I want it to go. And I think, as you said earlier on, it's not a case of getting...
Do you have any of your own projects that you're working on? Like any sort of your own sort of separate dreams or...
The writing that
you're doing at home.
That I do at home.
Right. What is that? Is that poetry or
novels?
No,
it's not.
Or,
it's not poetry.
It's a book.
It's a book.
Okay. Excellent.
But
a novel or?
Yeah, it's pure fiction.
Have you actually written and published a novel before? Or
no, I haven't. I haven't had it published at all. And it's the awful thing of, I don't know. You've got to be so disciplined.
Yes.
To sit down and write. It's easy enough.
That time, it's time consuming.
But I can lose myself in it.
Yes.
But equally, it's to do it every day or every night. And then a lot of the time I go back and think, what a load of twaddle.
And do you find it hard to sort of assess your own work, to judge your own work?
No, I find it easy to bin it.
That's not always easy to do. It's like you've got to kill your babies, as Henry James said. It's not always easy to cut out bits.
Mm. And I'm not that. I sometimes toy with the idea of letting my husband read it.
Yeah.
And then I
have you got any readers? Have you got anybody who's
No, I haven't dared.
Oh, right, okay.
I really haven't at the moment, yeah. But it's got to be done, I think.
Well, somebody's going to have to read it sometime. Well, not necessarily. I mean, it could be the only novel ever read by one person, written and read by one,
one person.
But I'm not sure. I don't know. What's the point in doing that? When writing a novel just for you? I guess you could do. I mean, I'm not trying to sort of say that no one should ever do that.
No,
some people do write.
It.
I mean, that's, to me, that's like a diary. Anybody who writes a diary, sort of, they're doing it and they lock it up. They're, they're doing it for themselves rather than their own personal.
Yeah. No, no, no. So, I think, you know, if you're going to write something, it has to be read.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully.
I just got to finish writing it.
That's not easy to do. Are we, are we ready for another tune? We're ready for another tune. Would you like to tell us, what your next choice is?
Yeah. This is, it's a guy called Paolo Conti. And Via Con Me is the track. And it's, again, all this music that I've chosen is largely to do with good times. This is hot. This is outside on somebody's terrace.
Is there a glass of wine involved in this one as well?
There's
somewhere?
Always wine. And I just like, he's got so many styles that, as well. And, you know, he's...
Brilliant. Okay.
I think he's not terribly well... Well, yes, he's well known, but not necessarily well understood.
No. Okay, here we go.
Via, via, vieni via di qui. Niente più ti lega a questi luoghi, neanche questi fiori azzurri. Via, via, neanche questo tempo grigio. Pieno di musica e di uomini che ti son piaciuti. It's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful. Good luck my baby, it's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful. I'd remove you, chips, chips. Datti do di do, chi boom, chi boom boom. Datti do di do, chi boom, chi boom boom. Datti do di do. Via, via, vieni via con me. Entra in questo amore buio, non perderti per niente al mondo. Via, via, non perderti per niente al mondo. Lo spettacolo d'arte varia di uno innamorato di te. Yeah. It's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful. Good luck my baby, it's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful. I dream of you, chips, chips, chips. Da-di-do-di-do, chi-boom, chi-boom-boom. Da-di-do-di-do, chi-boom, chi-boom-boom. Da-di-do-di-do. Via, via, vieni via con me. Entra in questo amore buio, pieno di uomini. Via, via, entra e fatti un bagno caldo. C'è un accappatoio azzurro, fuori piove un mondo freddo. It's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful. Good luck my baby, it's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful. I dream of you, chips, chips. Datti do di do, chi boom, chi boom boom. Datti do di do, chi boom, chi boom boom. Datti do di do.
Okay, that was Paolo Conti, Via Con Me. I understand you've got other interests in life, and you sort of have done other things.
Well, they're largely thanks to my husband, who's created quite a lot of adventure in my life. He's a apart from, you know, being in broadcasting himself for a long time, he was with the ABC in Australia as a
That's how you met?
No, I met him over here in when I was in advertising, and he was in advertising. He was also a commercial producer. But in New
Zealand. Was he your rival then, would you say?
He was at one stage. Yes, I can remember him sending me a cassette in the days when we had cassettes of his voice, it's like the voice of God. It's amazing. And, he sent me a cassette, and I thought, oh, it's that Paul Vasey. Well, he can wait, because it was a voice demo. But no, we met over here, but he was a main television newsreader over in Australia.
Okay.
And he also used to do motor racing in TR3As, I think. And he brought that interest over here. And right. We did the first, it was called the Monte Carlo Challenge. And it was for older cars. So yeah. we got, it just crept in because it was a 1960s Citroen ID. He did it up. And it was just like the Monte Carlo Challenge, but it was
And you drove all the way to Monte Carlo.
Yeah, we started off in Glasgow.
Right.
And, not every, but there were various points of the compass that people started from. And we had a passenger and I navigated. Mm-hmm. I was the navigator. Paul was the driver. And, We traveled all the way.
How do they tell whether you've won or lost? I mean, what is it?
Well, you've got time sections. There are time trials.
Based on model car, because if you're driving a Model T, a 1912 Model T, you're not going to keep up with a sort of a 1960s.
You have to do, I don't know that you'd have, there was that discrepancy, but you've got time trials, and it's also just about finishing as well.
Right, okay.
And there was, I don't know how it all happened. I mean, this is 1990.
Yeah. But it's all supposed to be just a bit of fun. I mean, of serious fun. But
oh, it's serious fun. And yeah. You don't sleep for a while.
Wow.
And we went down the Col Turini, which is the famous icy, pass. And we just slid. And there's a low wall and yeah. We just stopped the car from going over a precipice.
Oh, yeah.
And then
sort of bumped into this wall.
Yeah. Well, we were only
you weren't hanging
like,
over the edge.
We were,
one of these
it wasn't the Italian
the car was
job,
teetering.
No.
So you're not saying that you had to rush to the back of the car in order to stop you going over the cliff.
It wasn't
anything like that.
It wasn't the Italian job.
Oh, okay.
No.
It wasn't the Italian job.
It was, but it was fortunate that little wall was there.
Yeah. But, so saved by a little wall.
Saved by a little wall. Yes.
Excellent. Okay. So have you done? You don't do any rally driving now. You're not involved in.
No, we don't. It's a pretty expensive sport as well.
Yeah.
And largely we stopped that about.
And you haven't still got the car then?
No, we do. We sold that on. We've had several. My husband's a sort of. You know how women are supposed to go for shoes? My husband goes for cars.
Oh, does he?
And he...
Cars are a bit more expensive than shoes, though.
Depends what shoes you get.
Well, that's
and not the price
that's
of
true,
our
yeah.
cars.
I suppose that's true.
We make sure that ours aren't expensive buy.
Yeah. But actually, the cars that I drive, probably you would pay more for a pair of shoes, because I don't buy expensive cars.
No, well, that's what I was meaning.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, he'll do them up rather than, but he seems to want to change them all the time.
Yeah, so. But he doesn't do any more broadcasting work.
He doesn't do anything on telly. But
do you travel a lot? Do both of you travel quite a bit? Or?
We used to, but in recent years it's been a bit difficult. And he's had to build his business as well.
Yeah, sure.
And then the circumstances of the surrounding the base here in Accrington. Made it very difficult for us to get away. But and it was very handy because he's a New Zealander.
Right, okay.
And,
you mentioned Australia, so I assume Australia.
Well, he's a New Zealander.
Right.
And we used to go out there to see the family, and I always used to enjoy the stop-off points, Penang, Fiji, Thailand, and that was the really exciting bit, although I love New Zealand as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of traveling. It's a long way to go. I've never been out that way, so... I think it's because I dread the 23 hours or however long it takes to get there.
It does take a long time.
Yeah.
But it's not that bad.
Are we ready to hear another song? Another tune?
Another tune. Right. Well. Oh, yes. Mr. Robert Plant. Yeah. Recognize the name?
I do. Yes. Absolutely.
And this track, I just find his voice fascinating. So versatile.
Okay.
And also, I just love the instruments on this track. And I like the whole album, actually.
Right.
I just think it's so well put together.
Yeah. But the song that you've chosen is?
The song is Even This Shall Pass Away.
Even This Shall Pass Away. Okay, great. Thank you.
Once in Persia reigned a king, who upon his regal reign etched
world before his eyes, gave him counsel at a glance, fit for every change and chance. Solemn words, and these are they: even this shall pass away. Trains of camels through the sand brought him gems from Samarkand. Fleets of galleys through the sea brought him pearls to rival these. But he counted little gain, treasures of the mine or main. What is wealth, the king would say, even this shall pass away. Palms of all his guests burned with clapping at his chest. Amid his figs and wine he cried, offered loving friends of mine. Pleasures come but not to stay, even this shall pass away. Then in answer to the king, fell a sunbeam on his ring, blinding light through fading gray. Ah, 'cause even this shall pass away. Even this shall pass away.
Okay, Helen, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been brilliant having you. It's been very, very interesting, fascinating. You've told me a lot I didn't know anything about. And I suppose when you think about it, somebody has to do that kind of those kind of jobs.
Yeah.
So maybe we could close out with one last tune.
Certainly. And now this one is Palumbo's Petit Bolero. And it's taken from an album that's the music from the novels of Louis de Bernier, of course, wrote Captain Corelli's Mandolin.
Yeah. And is that why you chose it? Do you have a special feeling for
No, it's because I'd love to be able to play like
Oh, yeah, okay.
It is, and it's vibrant. It's, it is just, I love, as I say, I would love, sometimes, you know, how people play the air guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, certainly when it comes to listening to opera or to anything that's well done, I always just imagine myself there on the stage.
Yeah.
And this
I think we all like to imagine ourselves doing
I'd love to be able to do
things like that. Yeah, that's great. Okay. Thanks again, Helen.
Thank you.
You take care.
Pleasure.
Okay.